Good day. I'm Jackie Judd, joined by Mary Agnes Carey of Kaiser Health News. And this is Health on the Hill, a conversation about recent activity on Capitol Hill regarding healthcare policy and legislation. Welcome, Mary Agnes.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Just before Congress broke for a recess, each chamber passed a budget resolution. When they come back, that is what they will be dealing with, among other things. What hints were in those resolutions that could tell us something about the future of health care reform?
The budget resolutions of both in the House and the Senate really mirror President Obama's priorities on health care reform. And so as we go forward, you know that Democrats are on the same page with the president, but the real open question here is whether or not the budget reconciliation process will be used. Budget reconciliation, to try to simplify it, is simply in the Senate, it would waive the 60-vote threshold to avoid a filibuster. It would mean that a health care bill would pass simply by a regular majority, 51 votes. The budget reconciliation language is in the House budget proposal, and it's not in the Senate budget resolution. And so what will happen is, as you say, after they come back from this two-week break, both the House and the Senate will have a conference. And the thought is that the budget resolution that emerges will have this budget reconciliation language, because Democrats really hate to give that up as a tool, if you will, to pass health care reform legislation.
And if it survives, it means health care reform would be fast-tracked. To a degree.
It could be, in a sense, that you could avoid a filibuster.
Right.
If you had 51 votes, now, of course, there could always be dissension in the Democratic ranks over what the bill looks like. They could have other problems getting consensus on the bill itself. There's a whole lot of problems that could happen, but it could mean that if the budget reconciliation language is in the budget resolution, when that health care bill comes to the Senate floor, they could pass it by a simple majority, 51 votes, rather than having to go to 60-vote threshold.
And when you look at the resolutions, putting the process piece of this aside and looking at the content of the resolutions, what can we divine about the future of this bill?
That health care reform is still, at this point, a very sweeping prospect. Interest in health care prevention, interest in health information technology, interest in sort of overhauling the health care system, looking at how we pay providers, how we give care in this country. There's a lot of interest in overhauling the health care delivery system in Congress right now. Whether or not they'll be able to do that is unknown, and we have to watch this process as it goes along. But it's still sort of at the 50,000 feet above perspective, if you will.
Okay. Let's move on now to Kathleen Sebelius. There was a hearing on her confirmation as Secretary of Health and Human Services, but there was no vote, and that will be taken up again after the recess. Two questions. Why the delay, and do you anticipate any problems?
Some Republicans wanted to submit questions in writing. This is very common on Capitol Hill. As you noted, she had a hearing in front of the Finance Committee. She also had a hearing in front of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, or otherwise known as the HELP Committee in the Senate. And lawmakers have limited amount of time to question any witness in a hearing. They have several demands. And as we know, this was the week before they went out for their two-week Easter Passover break. So some Republicans wanted to submit questions. They want answers in writing. I don't anticipate any problems at all, because there is a back tax issue. The nominee and her husband paid some back taxes. The governor said in one of her hearings that the Senate Ethics Panel had identified a couple of stocks in their portfolio that were troublesome, but if confirmed, they'll divest of the stocks. It seems like her nomination is on track, and this is simply sort of par for the course in the Senate, if you will, that if a member wants a question answered, that must be answered before the nomination proceeds. But I don't anticipate a problem with her confirmation.
And during the hearings, what were the health reform-related questions and issues that members were most interested in getting her take on?
They were very interested. Several Republicans were very interested in this public plan option. And did she support it, which she said she did. She felt that it could add competition to the marketplace. She felt that it could help consumers. Some things she talked about, I think, that could give Republicans heartburn include the public plan option. And also, she seemed to signal that she's very interested in negotiating with prescription drug companies on the behalf of Medicare beneficiaries that have the Medicare drug benefit. And she said she would look forward to managing that aggressively. And she said as a governor in Kansas, she had done the same sort of thing for state employees. So I think that caused some concern among Republican members and they're concerned about it, and that'll be part of the debate as we go forward.
Okay. Final question related to tobacco and the Food and Drug Administration's authority to regulate it. Where does that stand?
The House has passed a bill to give FDA the power to regulate tobacco. It now goes before the Senate. It's a very sweeping bill talking about regulating advertising, marketing, manufacturing of the products, advertising near schools, outdoor billboards, you name it. This bill has come up repeatedly in Congress. The feeling is it will pass the Senate this time, that the mood has changed. There's a strong sentiment it's a public health issue, that Congress must act, and President Obama has signaled he will sign the bill, so action is expected soon after this two-week break.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will be back when Congress reconvenes.
Great. See you then.
Thank you.